Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to Be Different. Yes, it's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. And I'm not too sure, Muhammad is indicating that we are on air, Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of program, Dare to Be Different. It's just wonderful that all of you tuning with us via the audio stream, Medium 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you that are listening to us via the DSTV. And we know many of you are still curled up in bed, and some of us haven't even ventured out into our gardens as yet. For the last couple of weeks, we're looking at some ideas that's coming through. We spoke about Chelsea, we spoke about trends, and this week we continue with that conversation, and we're looking at lessons that we've learned, and also some different types of plants that we could put into our gardens. And you know, the term I found fascinating was the term called eco-warrior plants, you know, so we can talk about some of that. And going to share all of that with us this morning is Michelle Kudze. Now, Michelle Kudze comes from a wonderful nursery, Brand Miller's Nursery, out just outside Roshni, and she's been a regular guest with us. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Ismail.
Thank you very much. And like I said, you know, we're looking at trends and so forth. People haven't really ventured out into the gardens as yet. Some of us still think it's too cold. Others think, well, it's not the right season. Well, I do know that trends have moved, and we are so fortunate in South Africa that we can do gardening throughout the year. It may not be a very, you know, pleasant early in the morning and late in the evenings, but the days have been just brilliant. You know, we've had wonderful sunshine. Talk about the brilliance of weather. I know that in speaking to a lot of people in the garden industry, and now I'm saying that, well, we're still waiting for that cold, you know, that one cold snap to come in, so that all the hojas, all the bad, you know, bacteria and insects that are in our garden, we hope that would be destroyed. But I don't know if that is still a possibility. What's your take on that, Michelle?
Well, I certainly hope we do get a cold snap, because if we don't get it now, what worries me is that we might get it in spring, and we definitely don't want it then at that time of year.
Yes, and the other thing about, you know, people are still talking about aphids and still talking about these, you know, hojas that they don't want in the garden. And is that something that's also a concern?
Yes, it is, because normally the winter kills off all those, and it hasn't this year for the simple reason that it just hasn't been cold enough.
You know, whilst we're talking, it hasn't been cold enough. People say, but it is cold, you know, it does. Whilst it, like, I beg your pardon, you know, temperatures do drop, but we haven't had those minus ones. We haven't had the black frost, or I have seen very little of the other frost as well. In your side, people are a little bit colder than our side.
Yes, we certainly are a bit colder than Johannesburg, but we definitely haven't had a cold winter this year. I can remember sort of 3 or 4 days that have really been bitterly cold this winter.
So, you know, when taking all of that into account, what do you think? And now, whilst we are planning out our gardens, it's a lovely time to be out, because, you know, you can sort of see your garden. There's not a lot of foliage covering. And perhaps it's time to look at what you'd like, you know, type of structural changes you could make in your garden. Is that right?
Yes, that's a very good idea, especially after the drought we've had last year. I think it's taught us a lot of lessons that we need to group our plants together so according to water needs. So perhaps it's a good time to sort of take, you know, a walk through the garden and actually have a look at areas and say, well, these plants actually belong more in shade because they need more water, so let's rather move them, because this is a good time to move things around. So plants that are in the wrong position according to their water needs, you could then definitely be moving around at this time of year.
So when we look at lessons, what do you think is the most important lesson that we've taken away from last year's drought?
I would say how we need to adapt, and we realize the weather is unpredictable, so we realize we need to start using grey water, not wasting water. We need to start collecting water, and we need to prioritize our watering. So when there is a shortage of water, to me, the priority would be the trees, because one can't replace a tree overnight. And, of course, your food, that you water your trees first and your vegetables and your fruit, and then concentrate on your other things. And when you water, water less frequently but deeply, to make sure that you encourage the plants to have deeper roots so that they can withstand a drought better. And, of course, I think one of the most important lessons we learned is the value of mulching, what a difference mulching makes in one's garden.
You know, just go back to some of the things. One of the things that was also sort of horrified me was one of the headlines that I looked at during the course of the week, which said that we'll be in a difficult position with regards to water up to 2025 because it's, you know, about ill planning. People haven't, you know, sort of applied their mind. So, and being a water distressed country, it does lead, and, you know, there's a lot of concern around that.
No, most definitely. And I think a lot of people just don't realize what a water-stressed country we actually are. And they need to change their way of gardening and try and garden using plants in the correct position and then also using more water-wise plants.
You know, and there's still a very big, you know, debate that's raging on with regards to grey water. Now, I know you've mentioned grey water, and some are saying you should and some say don't use it on your, you know, your food and your herb plants, but using others. Some say, no, it could. And many of the soaps these days are, you know, are sort of the manufacturers take that into account, and they're not as harsh as the soaps of yesteryear. Is that correct?
That certainly is correct, yes. And I think what's important to know is that when you're using it on edibles, it mustn't touch the edible part of the plant. So, for example, if you're using it on your summer crops like your chilies and your tomatoes, it's fine for the bottom on the ground, but don't let it touch the edible parts of your food.
So what we'd say then, if anybody's using grey water, is to water your roots as opposed to watering perhaps the leaves and the plants.
I mean
the leaves and the fruit. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. And not to use it continuously on the same spot. You need to sort of every 2 or 3 weeks flush it with clean water so that you don't use the grey water continuously so that you have a build-up of salt.
Now we're talking about, you know, harvesting the grey water. I know there's been a lot of technology that has been advanced. Is there anything that's specific that people could install and, you know, harvest the grey water, or is that not yet available within the South African context?
Basically, there's been a very big move to these rainwater tanks, for example, the JoJo tanks that are available, but not a lot of people can afford that. So other ways that one can harvest water is just to put big buckets under your gutters, under your downpipes of your gutters. So at least that way you can also harvest the water. But what's important is that one mustn't let the water stand forever and ever. You must try and use it up, and it should be covered so that you don't get algae growing.
Yeah, you know, that's the rainwater, but, you know, I'm just worried about, people are saying they're harvesting some of the grey water. Now, is there a way to sort of bring it out? Is there an outlet pipe? Do you know of an outlet pipe that comes from the bathroom that you could sort of directly into your garden or something? Is there something like that?
I'm sure they are on the market, and one can store it, but the problem with grey water is that you can't store it for any length of time. It needs to be used quite regularly.
Okay, we're going to come back with grey water and succulents as we go along in the plant. I just wanted to raise that. Now, when we talk about the lessons, one of the lessons that we've learned definitely is that being a water-stressed country, we've got to find all resources. And one of the things I know, and I would say that definitely I'm also guilty of that, is, you know, we go back to our old habits so easily. At the moment, we don't think there's, you know, there's a shortage of water, so you go back and you do things that you're not supposed to be doing. You know, when we're in that position, we make sure that we try to save every drop of water. Come the rains, and it's come towards the end of the season, and now everybody's fine and happy. And I find that we're going back to our old habits. Is that right?
No, definitely. People don't save water in South Africa, and it's a huge problem because, as you say, the minute there's rain or the minute the water restrictions are lifted, they think then they can just start watering and wasting water.
Now, what do you think, what sort of advice would you give? You know, people who are starting out gardens, that's the one set of people, and people who have gardens, how do we help them along with this water issue?
I think people that are starting new gardens need to really think about grouping plants together according to their water needs and making sure that the plants are in the correct position. And by that I mean, for example, tropical plants that have huge leaves like elephant ears, they generally need a lot more water. So plant them in the correct position, more in a shady spot, so that they won't need that much more water. And for example, things like impatience, when we're talking now about spring gardening, don't go and put your impatience in full sun, because obviously they're going to need a lot more water. Put them where they belong, in the shady spot, because then you won't be wasting water. And if you group your plants together, it'll mean it's easier for you to water if you're putting the plants together that need a lot of water. For example, those that want color, there are also water-wise seedlings, and group them together at the entertainment area or around the pool or the front door, so that you put them in strategic spots, that you don't put it mixed with your shrubbery that needs less water.
And, you know, coming back again to the debate about, you know, and again talking water, endemic and indigenous, I know that whilst we're not purists and we're not saying that we would love only those, but it would be best to get those particular plants in your garden if you're starting it out from scratch. Is that right?
No, definitely. There is a bit of a myth with indigenous plants. I have to just mention that not all indigenous plants are water-wise, but many of them certainly are. But there are also a lot of exotic plants that use less water. And generally speaking, the plants with hairy leaves or smaller leaves and grey leaves tend to require less water than your glossy green big-leafed plants.
So, you know, we have there's two groups of plants. Let's go back again. We start looking at some of the lessons learned. So one of the things we've learned about is with regards to water. Was there any other lesson that we think that is an important takeaway from the previous season?
I think the importance of mulching, I think it was very much more evident this last season. People that did mulch actually realized the benefits of the mulching, that it actually keeps the soil moist longer, because your sun can't beat down on the soil itself, because you've put a layer of either straw or bark chips or shredded newspaper on, and that definitely helps to keep the soil cooler and retain its moisture. So for me, I think the best lesson we've learned is the benefits of mulching.
Now, going back to mulching, I know that whilst I must say to you that I found this being used extensively in countries like Australia and Canada and even India, where they do lots of mulching. But unfortunately, this hasn't sort of caught on within the South African, you know, public. We don't see the importance of mulching, and we don't realize that mulching could do so much. Is that right?
Correct, yes. The South Africans don't use mulching as much as overseas. And I think what's important to remember is that mulching is also aesthetically nice. So it improves the look of your beds as well, apart from the benefit that it gives.
You know, again, look, you know, I know there was a trend, and I think we spoke at length in a previous program, where people used to actually sweep up and make sure that the beds were, you know, sort of pristine and clean and didn't look like it was dug up and so forth. And those things are of yesteryear, is that right?
Correct, yes. People don't realize that you need to leave the leaves on the soil, because first of all, you encourage earthworms, which improves the quality of your soil, and also it gives you your mulch, which gives you your benefits of your mulch, and as I say, it looks nice, and gone are the days of the pristine garden. It's a little bit more of, shall I call it, a wild look, and it's just so much more beneficial all around.
Yes, you know, sorry, you're breaking up, Michelle, you're breaking up.
I'm still here.
Okay, carry on. I'm sorry we couldn't hear that last bit.
Now, I was saying that people need to understand that gone are the years of the perfect manicured garden. It is definitely much more of a, for want of a better word, a wilder look, where you leave the leaves so that they can do their job and the earthworms can then improve the quality of your soil.
So, you know, it's giving its, you know, like a natural look, what it is, you know, what it would be in its natural form, wherever it is, trying to recreate that. I think that's important.
Yes, most definitely. Nature knows what to do, and if you leave the leaves, it will all happen like it should.
And you, like you were saying, you know, mulch could be attractive. We have both living and organic mulches, you know, so the we have these, you know, hard landscapes. Depending on where you are and whatever garden you want to create, you can get some stunning effects with mulching.
No, most definitely. And I think what's important is that a lot of people don't realize, as you mentioned, living mulches, is ground covers can be used as a mulch. And while they look beautiful, they also do the job of keeping the soil cooler. And one thing I'd just like to mention, there's a very big trend, particularly in housing, where people are using dump rock and succulents and that type of thing. And what concerns me about that type of garden is that I personally feel that the rock is actually attracting the heat, and that it's not as effective as a mulch as opposed to something like a bark or macadamia shells or straw, because the rock actually retains the heat. So whilst it might keep the soil warmer in winter, now in summer I just feel it possibly adds to drying the soil out.
And are you talking particularly the grey and the pink rocks?
Yes, those big dump rocks that they're using, because that attracts the heat.
It makes sense, yes, it does, definitely, because I think it attracts, and then, of course, that would mean more watering.
This is the thing. So while it looks very nice and people think that they're creating a water-wise garden, my personal opinion is that bark would be much more effective as opposed to something like pebbles or dump rock.
And you think pebbles fall in the same category as dump rock?
Yes, most definitely. I personally think that either macadamia shells or rooibos mulch or bark chips are definitely much more effective.
You know, the other day I saw something that looked very, very attractive, and there was peach pits and apricot pits, and I thought that was a marvelous idea, but I don't know how expensive. Is that easily available to those two particular ones?
They are fairly readily available, and the price is very much in line with the bark chips.
Okay, so those are available. So we're looking at that as mulching. Now, is there any other particular lesson that we've learned from the past? And we're looking at mulching, we spoke about watering. What else, in your opinion, was a lesson that we've learned?
To prioritize your watering in a time of drought, as I mentioned earlier, to me the trees are more important for the simple reason that you can't replace a tree overnight. A tree takes years to reach maturity. So definitely, when you're in a time of water crisis, concentrate on your food plants and on your trees, because your shrubs and your perennials and your seedlings can be much easier replaced than what you can replace a tree.
Thank you very much for that, and I think we're going to put that to bed now for a while. That's the lessons learned from the past season. What we're going to look at, some of the plants and the eco. Now, I want to go quickly to the term eco-warrior plants. What is your understanding of an eco-warrior plant, Michelle?
That would basically be a just plant that can really withstand the heat and the drought.
Sorry, man, you're breaking up, Michelle.
I was saying a tough plant that can really withstand the heat and the drought.
Okay, now, you know, but when you look at the term eco-warrior plants, it seems like these plants are not very attractive. They don't seem to have the beauty. Is that true?
No, I definitely don't agree with that.
You know, because when you think of a warrior, you think of someone that's coming out fighting. You know, I'm just trying to think of the type of image it would conjure in people's minds. So it is a warrior plant, and what type of plant is that? The one that's going to be full of, thorns, and it's going to be prickly, it's going to be ugly, and, you know, it's going to have no beauty whatsoever. Take us through some of that.
Yeah. Now, generally speaking, your plants with thorns in general are very much more water-wise plants. When we think of things like cacti and agaves, they have thorns. And whilst they might not appeal to everybody, they definitely are very resilient and they can handle the punch of the heat and the drought.
Now, when we talk about, you know, just quickly, explain to us the difference between, a succulent that has thorns and the agaves, and the succulent that doesn't. Is there a defining difference?
Yes, definitely. Basically, aloes, agaves, and cacti are all considered succulents, but generally the term cacti refers to the ones with thorns, and succulents refers to the ones that do not have thorns. They have more the fleshy leaves.
And so an agave, would they fall into succulent, or would they fall into cacti?
It is both. It is a succulent, but because it's got thorns, it is a cacti.
Okay, and then how much of this, I was looking at an article, some of these are not indigenous to South Africa, they come in from places like Mexico, North Africa, and Madagascar, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. A lot of them from Mexico, and there are quite a few indigenous ones, but generally it's more your succulents which are indigenous, and the ones with the thorns are mostly the exotic ones.
We're going to go for a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We're going to look at the different types of plants. You're going to take us through where we could plant them, the different zonings that we needed, and also look at whether they're just into one category, or do we get them, for example, do we get them herbs, do we get them in flowering, and let's look at all of that. So we're going to go for an air break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We've just tuned in. My name is Ismail Vriyava. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in. I beg your pardon, all of you being part of our conversation this morning. And we've got a wonderful guest, that's Michelle Kudze, and we're talking about eco-warrior plans, what's to be done, lessons that we've learned from the past seasons, and we'd like to, the number to dial 854-1548, any queries, any questions, and Michelle would help us with that. Thank you very much, Michelle. Now, when we're looking at, getting into planting these, succulents and so forth, are there specific guidelines that we need? Hello, Michelle. I don't think we've got Michelle Muhammad. I don't know. It seems like we've lost Michelle. Have we lost Muhammad? Well, whilst we're waiting for Michelle, we're talking about water-wise guidelines. We're looking at some of the eco-warrior plants. There's lots of plants that we can plant. And we're looking at what we've called the drought busters, so there's lots to be done in our garden. We're getting into that time of the year, August, where we're going to be doing lots and lots of things. We're going to be very, very busy with our gardens, and there's lots of other chores to be done at this particular time of the year. So it's now time, if you haven't gone to your garden, to go out, take a look and see what needs to be done. What areas do you think you wanted to change? What do you want to change? We've had the drought. What have you learned? What do you think has got to be done? And I think those are some of the important lessons that we've learned from the past season. And for me, one of the most important has been, the putting down of mulch. Now, many of us are not able to, haven't done that, but I think it's such an effective way. In winter, it keeps, keeps the ground cool, warm, and in summer it cools it down. And, it's an ideal place where we can get all the natural things happening underground, where lots of the earthworms and those insects that are beneficial to the garden would be attracted to. So if you haven't done that, I think just one of the things I would suggest is that we get into mulching. We've got Michelle online. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Ismail.
Sorry about that. And well, now as we're going into, the new season, but before we look at that, tell us something about, succulents. Where should they be planted? Are there certain guidelines?
Succulents definitely prefer full sun, and they also do very well in containers. So that's a nice way to sort of bring a bit of green in around the entertainment area if you're wanting plants, and it's a very hot area, particularly if there's paving, then you could certainly consider succulents around the entertainment area.
Now, when you're looking at succulents, is there a way of grouping them? Do you think they should be grouped?
They certainly look better when they're grouped together. However, having said that, I'm also a firm believer in containers to plant one big specimen plant, but it also looks nice if you have a combination of plants. So it depends on what effect one wants. If you're a type of person that likes a more modern look where you're planting perhaps three of the same containers, then I would recommend sort of three structural plants that are all three the same as opposed to a mixture.
And, they would make a stunning wow effect in any garden. When you come in there and you just saw one of these, and, if you have a good mix of the, living mulch or the other mulch, and you come in and you have these three. And I've seen that when you enter that particular garden, you get drawn to it automatically.
No, most definitely. They really can make a statement, particularly something like the fire sticks, because they color up beautifully in autumn and winter, and you have these red sort of sticks that are, they look literally as though they are on fire.
Now, when we're looking at, grouping them, what should we take into account?
I think you need to look at your colors so that you try and make it attractive as possible, because whilst the succulents do flower, they flower for such a short time, and most people want color in their garden. So have a look at the ones that have possibly got a little bit more purple in their leaves, or others have a little bit of yellow and pink, and others are more red with red tips, and try and combine the different ones together to give you more color, as well as different textures. You might have an upright succulent, and then you might have one that grows more like a ground cover, which will actually hang over a pot if you're planting it in a pot or in a flower box or on the ground. It'll act more as a ground cover. So you can combine different shapes, textures, and different colors.
What about the soil? Are they very particular about the conditions which they grow in?
Yes, they need quite a bit of sun, and then their soil needs to drain well. So it's quite important, if one's got a soil that's slightly on the clay side, to add a bit of coarse river sand to make sure that your soil drains well. And there is also commercially mixed succulent mix available. But those wanting to mix your own, you would basically take your garden soil, mix a bit of compost in to improve the quality of the soil, and then add the coarse river sand to improve the drainage.
And when you've done all of that, now, when should you be, you know, sort of considering planting? Is this the time or should we still be waiting?
One can plant now. There are a couple of succulents that are a little bit more frost tender, particularly the one with the hairs on the leaves. They tend, the furry ones, they tend to be a lot more frost tender. But it depends on in which area you are. If you're in Johannesburg, I say it's fine at the moment, but if you're in a frosty area like the Vaal, I certainly wouldn't recommend all of them right now. Rather wait a bit, because we can have another cold snap.
What about places like Natal and, perhaps Western Cape and so forth? Would they
certainly... Yes, then you can certainly plant right throughout the year.
Okay, we've got a call in line. Let's take that caller first. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, Ismail.
Walaikum assalam. Please go ahead.
Jazakallah for the function. Good morning to you, Shah.
Good morning.
I have plants here where you have a lazy housewife, green beans, excuse me, and then we have what you call the longest plant to get the... We call it papri and we call it tour, etc. But this particular tour tree, it grows about 2-3 meters high. And I tend to find that every day you find ants coming up there, and you find like a white cocoon forming on every branch. What can I do to stop this, please?
Basically, if there's ants, it's usually a sign that there's a form of other insect, either scale or aphids or mealybug. So you need to have a closer look, particularly under the new leaves, to see if there's not possibly aphids. And then you need to treat the root of the problem, which is often either the aphids or the mealybug. And then the ants are sort of attracted by those other insects.
I've been trying quite a few, remedies, but nothing coming right. What can I, is there any something specific that I could buy or use or something?
At your garden center, your local garden center, you can go and then ask them for a fairly general insecticide which will take care of aphids as well as scale and mealybug. And that type of product will definitely probably sort the problem out.
I think this is a mealybug, you say,
yes? Yes, mealybug, aphids and scale. Those are normally the causes.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And when you talk about these, one concern I have, and what he was talking about is it has an edible, seed to it, and the concern around that is that whatever you use, make sure that if you're going to ingest it, that it's sort of environment and eco-friendly. Otherwise, if you can put some of the systemic, maybe detrimental to human beings. Is that correct?
Yes, most definitely. I'm so glad you brought up the point of systemic, because there's so many new systemic insecticides on the market, and the problem is with them, because they're systemic, in other words, they get taken up by the plant, they have a much longer time that they remain in the plant. So first of all, when you're choosing a pesticide, you need to make sure that it's safe to use on edibles in the first place. And then secondly, there's always a waiting period on the pamphlet which indicates from the last time that you've applied the pesticide up to the time of harvest, how long that time must be. So that's very important that people adhere to that and that people are aware of that. Because often what happens is, for example, with something like aphids or scale, one needs to do a follow-up treatment. So, for example, you're spraying today and then you're repeating in 10 days' time, and it's from that last spraying that you need to start counting the number of days, according to the pamphlet, before you can actually harvest the fruit.
Yeah, just on that, I think when you talk about, sort of maybe the organic ones, is that what happens is many of us don't have the patience. So when we spray on the first time, we want results, but unfortunately that doesn't happen. So if you're using something more mild, like an organic or something, mark drop, whatever the case may be, is to use it consistently and not to just give up after one go. So if you're planting, and for example, looking at mealybug, don't think you've sprayed it once and it will go away, but you've got to do repetitively. Is that correct?
Yes, most definitely. One has to do a follow-up spray.
And, unfortunately what happens is I think sometimes when we become impatient and we're fine, we've done it once and it should go away, and it doesn't go away.
Yes, well, just take yourself if you're sick. You don't just have one pull, whatever it is. You need to do a follow-up. And, for example, the antibiotics, you need to finish the course. So the same applies here. You need to do a follow-up spray, most definitely.
Now, when we're looking, sorry, man, Michelle, we're still talking about these warrior and these succulent plants and so forth. Can we kill the succulents by overwatering?
Yes, most definitely you can. And you'll find that often when we have a lot of rain, that some of them actually start rotting and the leaves sort of just start collapsing. So one definitely can overwater succulents, yes.
And one of the, now, when we come back again, just not to succulents, but we're talking about, you know, water-wise plants and so forth, are we spoiled for choices like we have other plants, or is that not true?
No, they are definitely, as you mentioned earlier, in different categories, they are definitely water-wise plants. For example, even in the herbs, you have things like bay leaf, you have rosemary, you have thyme, and you have lavender. They all definitely need a lot less water than something like a basil, for example. And even with the fruit trees, citrus, olives, and pomegranates, excuse me, I beg your pardon, they definitely need a lot less water than many of the other fruits.
Okay, so in different categories you do have them. For example, in herbs you have them, and so and likewise with the fruiting plants. What about, you know, in the aesthetics, people always want beauty, you know, want to come color. Would it be possible for us to get some of the beautiful colors?
Oh, yes, definitely. Even in seedlings, for example, at this time of the year, your calendulas, your gazanias, the alyssum, the mesums, and even the dianthus, they need a lot less water than a lot of the other perennials and succulents, seedlings. I beg your pardon, I'm coughing now. If not, hold on one sec, please.
It's fine.
I beg your pardon, listeners.
No, it's fine. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. And even when it comes to perennials, things like the butterfly bush, the gora, or irises, or salvias, they can also handle a lot less water.
Now, you know, we're getting into that time of the year now where people are getting out into the garden, wanting to sort of make choices, and we're now helping them along with some of the, you know, what we'd call the eco-warrior plants, some that would withstand all of that. And we say we do have a wider choice and wider variety. When people go into garden centers, what should they be looking at and what should they be asking for?
Many of the garden centers have boards up with what they call one-drop, two-drop, and three-drop plants. That was an initiative through Rand Water. And they also mark plants water-wise. Obviously, in the indigenous section, the garden centers that have an indigenous section, you'll find also water-wise plants there. Generally, your form plants, and when I say form plants, I mean things like flaxes and yuccas and cordylines and cycads, they are all water-wise. And then, of course, most of your ornamental grasses can get away with very little water, so that's also something to look at. But have a look in the garden centers for your one-drop and your two-drop plants, and then also plants that are marked water-wise. And to make it easier for the listeners, basically, if we're thinking of a one-drop plant, you're thinking of plants that can get away with once a week being watered, and two-drop plants you need to water twice a week, and the three-drop plants three times a week. Just to put it in layman's terms, that's how one can think about those plants.
Well, I think that's a fantastic initiative. So it comes up and it gives us some guidelines of what we could and put into our gardens and what, and the amount of water that it would be, you know, the requirements. Now, we are going into the month of August, but before we go into that aspect, I think something that you've raised, and I think that's something that's happening all the time, the trends are showing that, and I think the economic downturn also indicates that people are now concerned about food and, you know, the food security part of it, of gardening, and more people are now gardening for food. Is that true?
No, most definitely. There's a huge move to gardening for food, and the general trend in South Africa is that food gardening has increased by about 5% in the last year.
Now, when you talk about food gardening, and I know they say it's inexpensive to share seeds as a seedlings. Is that correct?
Yes, most definitely. And the thing is, if you're going to be starting from seed, what I need the listeners to be mindful of is that don't go and sow the whole packet at once. You need to sow and then sow sort of a week or two later, so that firstly, if we have a cold snap, that you don't kill your whole crop. And also that, for example, if you don't keep your seeds moist and they die, at least you've got more seed to follow up. And also that way you increase your harvesting time, because everything won't be ready at once.
Now, is this the right time to sort of to look out for seeds, or is it still a bit too early?
It is a bit early. Your
summer crops usually appear on the shelves sort of from the middle of August, and mostly in the frosty areas, it's a problem already to sow now, but in the warmer areas, one can definitely already sow now. But a lot of the seed companies don't put the product on the shelf yet till about the middle of August.
And when we're looking at, you know, the food security again, we're talking about, is there sort of, I don't know, would that be a correct question, but with water, is it water guzzlers or aren't there water guzzlers? I'm talking of food specifically.
Basically, more your leafy foods like your spinaches and your lettuces, they do need a lot more water as opposed to something like a tomato or a chili or a brinjal. However, once those are in fruit, they will require more water. But the actual plant of a tomato or a brinjal is definitely a lot less water thirsty than something like a spinach or a lettuce.
And, you know, just talking about food security, have people now moved away from the traditional type of foods? You know, we're talking about the leafy ones. Have they gone become more adventurous in trying to plant other things? Because I know, for example, in the winter we had people experimenting and planting lots with the oriental herbs. For the summer, is there other herbs or other plants that they're thinking about?
Yes, most definitely. In summer, it's more things like basil and coriander and that type of thing, and chives and parsley and so on, that people are definitely planting. Whereas in winter, as you said, it's more the orientals.
And, you know, we're now coming into August. What needs to be done at this particular time? What are the watch points? We're now at the end of July. Some people have started pruning. Others haven't pruned as yet. Some guidelines.
Basically, this is traditionally the right time to prune, first of all, your fruit trees as well as your roses. And you can also be scarifying your lawn. And for those that don't know what scarifying is, that is setting your mower on its lowest setting and actually cutting your lawn very short. And then what you need to do is take a steel rake and try and rake out all the old grass so that you're basically giving the grass a chance to rejuvenate. And then you can take a fork and actually spike your lawn, either with a roller or with a fork. And if you've got drainage problems, you can then sweep coarse river sand into those holes to make sure that you improve your drainage, particularly if it's possibly a path that you use on your lawn all the time. Often I find people are walking the same path to the washing line continuously across the lawn, and that soil does become compacted. So that's what one needs to do. And you can, of course, start preparing your beds for your summer veggies by digging in compost and your fertilizer and getting it ready so that when it's time for the summer crops, your soil would be ready.
Now, just talking about, you know, the fruit trees, should it be given a good, you know, shearing, or how should we do? You know, when we're cropping, how severe should that be?
That depends on what variety of fruit it is, because generally it's your peaches and your nectarines that get pruned quite severely, whereas things like apples, pears, plums and cherries, there it's more a question of shaping.
Okay. I've heard a query here. Someone's got a pawpaw on his tree and is green. Is it? Would it be advised to take it down and ripen on the shelf, or should you leave it? And if it, the chances if you leave it on the, you know, the birds may eat. What advice?
This is always the problem with the birds, is I think the poor things are so desperate because of the drought. The correct way would be to make sure that it starts definitely colouring up, because if you pick it too early, first of all, you don't have the proper flavour, and I find it just takes so long to ripen off the tree. What does help to ripen other fruit is to put bananas in the same basket as your other fruit, and the bananas definitely help ripen the other fruits much quicker.
Thank you very much for that one. And again, let's just go back to in August. Now, we're talking about scarifying, and we're talking about, what about lawns that haven't turned brown, they're still green, gardens are still, you know, they haven't had them, because of the eco-climate within those gardens, they've had walls and so forth. What advice do we have for them?
Yeah. Basically, the scarifying is really only if your lawn hasn't been in good condition that you need to do it. But if you've had the opportunity to have a nice green lawn all throughout, then all you need to do is just cut it a little bit shorter and then make sure that you feed it with a fertilizer that's got a high phosphorus content. For example, something like a 2-3-2 or a 2-3-4, because it's the phosphorus which encourages root development, which is what one wants at this time of the year. Because, as I've mentioned previously, is that you need to feed your roots first before you can feed your leaves.
Going on, you know, getting into the summer season, what do you think, or what have you picked up in terms of the trends? What do you think are going to be the trends for 2017 going to 2018?
Most definitely many more succulents, because we find that that's definitely a growing department, and of course the food as well. And seedlings always remain popular. Whether there's water or not, people do want to have a little bit of colour. And what I also find being very popular is container gardening.
Because people are finding that they can't manage to keep their whole garden alive because of the drought, for example, I see a lot of them have opted for smaller areas where they've actually placed containers and rather plant their plants in containers so that it's much easier for them to water. And they've placed them in strategic spots around the entertainment area and around the entrances. So I see definitely a big increase in container gardening.
Also, the trend that I've picked up is with regards to a living wall where people are now planting vertically. Is that a possibility for everyone?
I personally don't think so, for the simple reason that the stuff that's commercially available, the actual containers, to my mind, are very small, and I find that I don't think they're allowing enough space for enough moisture to sustain the plants for a long time. So whilst they might look nice, my personal opinion is that the containers are not actually big enough to sustain the plants.
And what about espaliers? You know, where you take them and plant perhaps an apple tree, or you train them against the wall. Do you think that would pick up?
Possibly, because of the smaller gardens. The gardens seem to be getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and space is a concern. So that's definitely a possibility that people might be considering that type of thing more, where you plant your fruit trees against the wall and you train them. They call it espalier. So basically, for the listeners that don't know, you would have your upright main branch, and then your branches on the side, you would bend them down so that they're completely horizontal next to the plant.
Thank you very much for that. Would like to share just finally, you know, when we're looking at, I'm looking at all the eco-warrior plants, what would you give us some names of some of these particular plants?
Okay, agaves most definitely, aloes, and indoors, your mother-in-law's tongue, the Sansevieria. Some people refer to it as the snake plant. They can be used indoors or outdoors in tropical areas. Your ornamental grasses, the flaxes, the yuccas, cycads, and then of course one mustn't forget the normal shrubs like bottle brushes, nandinas, the Australian rosemaries, lavenders. They definitely all can do with a lot less water, and Cape daisies, agapanthus, buddleias, just to mention some of the indigenous plants as well.
And then for a garden, if there's someone wants a tree, is there a particular tree you could recommend?
Most definitely your wild olives would definitely be a very good choice, as well as one of your Australian trees. They call it in Australia the currajong, and its real name is Brachychiton, and that they use as a street tree in many areas, and it's a very nice upright tree with a round crown, and that's definitely also a very smart tree.
And I've got finally just a question here that says that, do you recommend anything for indoors?
For indoors, your mother-in-law's tongue can do very well, your yuccas, as well as the small-leafed umbrella plant, the Schefflera, that does very well indoors as well, and even things like crotons.
Okay, and what about some of the fynbos and Proteus species, good enough?
Yes, they also are water-wise, and what's important to know with them is that they also like well-drained soil, and they do very well in containers. So the listeners could plant them in containers, but they like an acid soil, so you need to mix acid compost with their soil when you're planting them.
And would that be the right time to plant them now, or is it too late?
No, you can plant them now, except in the very cold areas. I would recommend waiting till about September.
Thank you very much for all the information shared. Michelle, you take care. Thanks for sharing with us. I know we're going to get you for lots more programs in the course of the year. You take care. Everything of the best. Before you just sign off, what have you got at Brandt Miller Nursery for us?
We've got some specials on pruning shears, and then Steri-Seal, which you need to seal your wounds, as well as gloves. And then we've got rose care to sort out all your rose problems, and then the Cape daisies, which are indigenous and which will supply water-wise colour for the garden.
Well, you take care. Thank you very much. And I know that you're not very far out. For people who don't know, you're just outside Roshni, a couple of kilometres, and you turn to left and you'll see it's well signposted. Thank you, Michelle. You take care. Everything of the best, and enjoy the rest of the day.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ismail.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye. And there's Michelle Kudzer from Barnt Miller Nursery telling us about you know, the Eco Warrior plants, Waterwise plants, and also some of the drought busters. There's been an interesting book that's come out. It's called A Field Guide to Succulents in Southern Africa, which showcases more than 700 intriguing and trendy plants for modern era of water-wise gardening. And that is published by Straight Nature. So anyone wants a good read and would like to look a little bit more on that, it's called A Field Guide to Succulents in South Africa. It showcases more than 700 intriguing and trendy plants for the modern era of water-wise gardening. The publishers are Straight Nature. It's all for me, inshallah, until we meet again. And before I sign off, these programs are podcasts, and please do visit our website under the gardening section. There's lots of useful information, inshallah. That's all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.